Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey, everybody. In this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On, we're getting up close and personal with actress Lauren Blumenfeld. Let's do it.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, sweet. Kendrick Lamar.
Wow.
Playing us in, yes.
Yes.
Playing us into this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On. This, of course, is the show that gets us up close and personal with all the great people, whether in front or behind the camera, that bring you all that great media that you watch, whether at home on TV, maybe on one of your mobile streaming devices. I'm your host, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. My guest today is an actress of many talents. She's been on Broadway. She's been on TV. She's currently starring as Penny Jones on the TV show Night Cap, which airs on Pop TV. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Lauren Blumenfeld.
Hi.
How are you?
And thank you for having
me. Look at this.
Me.
So, Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Yes, what is it about him that speaks to you?
I think he's a genius. Mm-hmm. I think he's an actual living genius, and his album just takes you on, his newest album and all of them, but his new one takes you on such a journey. Very different way to start the show. It's going to add that.
Yes, like, right, exactly. So, I know we talked a little bit before the show started, and you said you're a podcast person.
Yeah.
So what is your balance kind of like in terms of podcast and music?
Oh, you know, it's so funny. I lived in New York for many years, and I really got into podcasts on the subway, sometimes as a way to drown out, you know, just get absorbed in a story. But in Los Angeles, I'm finding that I want to listen to music and cruise more.
Well, this is a welcome back to you because you are one of the rare things we find here in Los Angeles. You are a Los Angeles native.
Yes, yes. Born and raised here and then went off to NYU and then just stayed in New York for far too long.
Do you feel it was far too long? Or do you feel not having been on both sides of the coast, is there one coast that you kind of tend to gravitate towards?
You know, I love them both. They're very different forever. As a child, I was one of those very annoying children who was like, I just want to go to Broadway. I was like, oh, dear. So I had always had this very romantic version of New York in my mind, and it exists and totally met all of my expectations. And at the same time, it's also tough. It's a tough place to live. But I think it kind of makes you stronger. So I love both coasts. I was ready for more sunshine, less of the intensity of winter.
I could believe that.
Yeah. Have you ever spent time?
I've spent some time, but only maybe like 3 or 4 days at a stretch.
Yeah.
But I've always thought it'd be cool to spend at least like a year or two in New York. I feel like that would be a really cool experience.
I feel like you would do great.
Oh, wow. Lord. Gosh, thanks. Well, one, I love that because there's so much good food to eat out there.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
But I feel like it's okay because you're going to be doing so much walking around there.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And the stairs going up and down the subways. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can eat whatever.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, I seem to just, well, only because I wanted to eat as much as I wanted to, I would just walk. I feel like I'm not going to take the subway. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to, just so I can earn whatever I want to get to. So I ended up walking lots and lots of stretches of the city.
Did your body feel sore from it?
No. No, I didn't. No, but I guess when you're also, you know, soothing that whatever pain there may be with, you know, like mac and cheese that you find at Smack or
right.
Donut
oh, my.
Plant. Or Shake Shack, wherever you
absolutely,
need to be going to.
Absolutely, yes.
So many good stuff. And I'm more of the, like, the comfort food person. I'm not going to do, like, all the, like, the high-end stuff. I was
no.
all about, like, oh, what's all this, like, not really good for you food that I should be finding in the city to eat.
Yeah, and it's also so incredibly portable in New York. Like, it's designed
yes.
for on-the-go, which is dangerous a little bit. Stop it.
Well, certainly the difference between New York and L.A., as you mentioned, like, more cruising around here, you're more isolated in the sense where you're going to be in your car a lot of the time.
Yes.
Do you kind of... Now having that, like, do you like being away? It's like, it's nice to just kind of have my own little kind of bubble, so to speak, for a little bits of the day.
Absolutely, yeah. I grew up, my mom, who's the best, this is the only thing that she has admittedly messed up on, but made me a very nervous driver. I just have such vivid memories of her just, you know, doing the imaginary brake.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I was a really nervous driver in high school. I was not like, I'm free. It was more like, I hope I don't die. It was strange to come back and kind of conquer that fear of driving, and now I really love it. As I was telling you, and you're like, give it time.
Yes, that's right. Oh, yeah, the traffic. Yeah, you'll slowly go, why did I miss this?
Yeah.
Why? Oh.
I know, but I'm in the honeymoon phase.
That's true. Enjoy it. Bask in that, because it will go away at some point. And so, yes, just enjoy this for as long as you can.
Yeah, I intend to.
So, now, as you mentioned your mother, when you grew up, I understand your first aspirations were like, you know, I'd like to get into entertainment by being a set decorator.
Again, a really strange child. At four, I don't know how I even learned that was a profession. but I like proudly announced that I was going to be a set designer. And I always liked creating spaces, like different locations. And so I would transform my room into all sorts of weird places. One time I tried to do an underwater theme. And that did not go over well. I was just didn't quite understand. You can't just fill a room with buckets of water. I didn't cause any damage. I think I was caught right before.
It's like, this is gonna be great. Well,
yeah.
So what was the end result for that? Is that you imagine like I am just like my bed is almost at water level, and I could just like swim to the door, and that'd be great.
Yeah, it was very like Little Mermaid inspired. I was like, well, all you need is water, right? and then you're good.
Well,
add
I feel
water.
Like, that's true. I feel like for at least growing up, like your bedroom is the one thing that you really have kind of pretty much kind of control over, and the way you kind of want to look and change it through as you grow up. And for you, I imagine, did your bedroom change a lot as you were growing up?
Yes, very much. It's so funny to look back at like the things that I just thought would be the best idea and so original, like deeply original to paint clouds on a ceiling. Who does that? and then have like a nature inspired room for a year. It was like very cheesy, but it was like the ownership of the space that felt so cool.
It almost feels like you're a fashion designer. Like this year, it's all going to be about the woods.
Guys. Yeah, definitely.
So as you're doing the set that you're not going to be a set designer, when does the idea like, you know, I just don't want to build these sets, but you know what? Also, I'd like to be on the stage and telling stories on these sets.
Yeah, that that occurred kind of organically because I wasn't done after I made the thing that no one else could identify as the space that I intended it to be. But I wanted to make stories in it. And I went to a really interesting, very progressive elementary school where I didn't learn necessarily math, but we did have like a storyteller come. And there was one storyteller, her name is Kathleen Zindel, and she unfortunately passed away. But I remember being in kindergarten, and she came, and she started telling these stories to our class, and it was life-changing. The idea that you could tell stories and make stories and share stories kind of set me on a path of wanting to do that in any way that I could.
Well, there's something in it, especially as a child, when you start to realize that things that you enjoy, that there are people behind making them, and that
right?
like also blows your mind.
Yeah.
Like, wait, this is something that somebody actually does, and maybe I could do something like this too.
Yeah, it's so cool. And Kathleen, she would show up with this duffel bag, and inside was her puppet Herbert, who would come out and talk and also tell these stories. And I was like, wait, you can be an adult woman telling stories and have a puppet? Oh. And that could be your job? It was like, I really went to another place with that information. So that kind of set the tone, and then I like got really passionate about it and really wanted to take it very seriously and probably too seriously as a young kid.
I mentioned that you were saying that you would be in your head a lot, and going to school at NYU give you a chance to really kind of more get in touch with your body and get out of your head and work on other parts and really kind of challenge yourself.
Yeah, I am. I'm pretty by nature. I definitely have a creative brain, but I am. I love rules. I love order. I can really be in my head. And at NYU, they have different studios that you can train in for the acting program. So they have Meisner technique, different techniques. I don't know if they still do, but there was a musical theater one, and I was like, I need to be in the experimental theater wing. And that's like the weird one, the one where we just pretty much, it was very much about like getting into your body and out of your head and kind of just really working on sharpening your own instincts. And I found that to be incredibly helpful, and particularly in like the comedy that I'm doing now, that's the thing to learn. It's not, for me, sometimes learning all of the techniques can make me very self-conscious, but tapping into like, no, this is my gut response, that is where interesting things start to happen in my experience.
Because if I were to look at myself, I feel like I very much like you were very much in my head, and more at least kind of less more reluctant to kind of embrace like just the physical side.
Yeah.
So as you're there in school, was there a moment where you realized like, where you could kind of see that switch happening for you, or like, oh, now I see why this is such a great area to explore?
Yes. There and still are amazing teachers there that would do these physical. I remember this teacher who used to actually run the drama program, Kevin Kolke, who's incredible. He did this very physical, was trained in very physical theater, and he had us do this thing called the circle of pain or the circle of death. It was one of those. And it was just all of these very rigorous physical activities. And then at the end of it, you would do your scene. And there was something really crazy that happened, especially watching them, to see when you have kind of pushed yourself physically, you've gotten past your brain, you're just tired. And then like what comes out is surprising and unique and interesting. So it was probably during one of those circle of death things where I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. And then it was like, okay, now do Hecuba. And I was like, okay. But it does kind of root you in a way that's really helpful, especially for us like people in our heads.
Because I guess is the challenge, or at least once you kind of discover that moment, then to be able to kind of like, how do I shorten the distance between that? Because you don't have time between a performance to do a whole circle of death.
Yeah, and also there's just one of my biggest pet peeves sometimes, or especially starting out going to auditions and watching other actors do their physical and vocal warm-ups before you go in, it's just like, oh, I don't want to be that person. It doesn't need to be public. But I think like anything, it's just practice. And definitely there are times where I'll write so many notes about a character and then it does absolutely nothing. And then I just kind of start figuring out a walk and I'm like, oh, okay. But it depends. Sometimes I need all of that heady work just to make me feel comfortable that I've done it, so then I can throw it away.
And what was it like going from Los Angeles here to NYU? I mean, certainly two huge cities.
Yes.
But you're leaving pretty much all your family here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Did you have any support system when you got in New York?
It was just
you.
I did not. I made friends that I consider family now there. But it was really, it's a really crazy place to go from being a teenager, living with your parents, to living in New York City, you know, not really having a campus. I think being a part of a studio, like being a part of this smaller experimental theater wing, was very helpful. I think otherwise I would have been like, how do I do this? I do think that I did not know how to handle winter for at least the first 5 years. I think, like, my skin turned a weird color. I had a cough that wouldn't go away. It was rough. But then I think it does kind of start to make you hardier or stronger, yeah, that you can survive it.
He used to say, what doesn't kill you just makes you stronger.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, there's that song, too. That's it.
So, you're in the experimental wing. And mm-hmm. as mentioned, you said that one of the greatest things that you learned there is that it's great. It's okay to fail.
Yes.
To have that opportunity to do that.
Yeah. I think it's a really good lesson. I think that it's so scary to fall on your face, but that risk is just so important because otherwise we never push ourselves. So I failed a lot, and it was really helpful to... the victory was trying something so new that scared me. It wasn't necessarily that it would always be great, because often we would do these self-scripting projects where we would make our own work, and sometimes in my head I was like, this one is so cool. That person's wearing an adult diaper. That person's playing with dominoes. And in my mind, and then it would be just an absolute train wreck. But it was... it's finding your voice and then also having the, in many ways, like the audacity to speak out loud, you know? And I think that was a lesson I definitely got from NYU. It's just like, try it.
Was there also the case of people just saying, you know, I'm going to use this opportunity to just be as outlandish as I want?
Yes.
To be able to almost in a sense kind of learn how to kind of rein themselves in, where it's like, I could do this, but nobody, it's a disaster if I go this far. So I need to kind of dial it back to be something more successful.
I think that that happens with a lot of people. And then also, I think college is a time where we're searching, kind of figuring out our identities. And I think it's really easy, especially if you go to a specialized school, to be like, oh no, I'm wearing a tutu every day. Like that, like to create an identity, a character, to push it too far as we're trying to figure ourselves out. But I think it's just so transparent. Like we know when someone is authentic, and if being authentic for them truly is wearing a tutu every day, that's their greatest version of themselves, then awesome. A lot of times, though, you look around and you're like, a lot of people are just putting on a show here. I don't know how much joy this is like bringing them, but it is a process of like trying on different things to see what actually feels authentic to you.
Were you putting up work that you created for audiences?
No, I mean, barely.
No.
Those were closed rehearsal rooms. Yeah. But we would do, I remember at the end of our second year, we had these second year projects, which is a bold thing for a university to be like, each student is getting 5 minutes in a black box to perform. I mean, some crazy things came out in people's performances, but it was like it was an exciting thing to witness. You start to learn, though, that sometimes the things that feel cathartic or important for your own development don't necessarily translate to like interesting or compelling theater. But I think that if you take a step back, it's possible to just like appreciate it on the merits of what it is, and then hopefully people build from that point.
Is it almost where it's like just the process of doing this is great for somebody to be able to kind of resolve some inner demons that they have, but then just stop short of the performance part. Like, yeah, if you could just do that, then we don't actually need to see you do all this. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really passionate about empowering children. And one of the organizations that I've been working with since college is called the 52nd Street Project. And it really is about like helping kids get, or just even giving them the space. They know that they have their voice, but giving them the space to write their own plays, make their own work. And there's something about watching that. It's all fun and great if you're in like an art school and in major debt afterwards. But like these tools of self-expression are so valuable to children and to all of us, but especially starting at a young age, to have adults act out your own work and to kind of to take that work seriously, I think, is really important.
Because I feel like as a child, there's less of that filter that we start putting on our own creativity as
right.
we get older. What are people going to think about this? So if you want to do something where, as you mentioned, like a toaster is yeah. hanging out with, you know, like a blender, then that's totally acceptable and that's great.
Oh my God, did you see that play at the 52nd Street Project? There was one about an avocado and a toaster, and it was brilliant. Yeah. But yeah, there isn't that... No, that can't be. We're not in our way as our own way. And I think that can be a really exciting time. If you don't see any boundaries, then you end up with plays with characters that you would never imagine together.
Now, because as I was reading about your involvement with that project, it sounds very similar to something like Story Pirates.
A Story Pirate also.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
all right,
they're
very
awesome.
Cool. Yes. So now, being all the way here on the West mm-hmm. Coast, how easy is it going to be for you to get back and feel like, I just want to do some more stuff with this
yeah.
great organization?
Well, I have what's called a SMART partner. It's their mentorship program. Oh. So the last 3 years I've been meeting once a week with this awesome 13-year-old Karen. She's the coolest. And so that has been a really hard transition. I just saw her when I was back for the premiere of Nightcap, and we had a great time. And we're texting.
Nice.
But yeah, I do really want to get involved here, and I'm looking for ways to get involved in my new home.
So while you're in New York and you're working on, you're auditioning, you're collaborating with the 52nd Street Project, and then all of a sudden you have an opportunity to be on Broadway. You're going to be in a show with Judith Light.
Hero, yes.
Now, I just remember that she comes up to you and says, you know, we should just take a little trip together just to kind of just do some research, get connected. What is that like when Judith Light comes up to you and says, hey, yeah, let's just go away for a little bit and just have a trip, just the two of us?
I mean, I died. It was so thrilling. From the moment I met her at some of the I was in a lot of the readings, the early readings, as Richard Greenberg was figuring out the play, and I would just watch her. I was just so in awe, and she's so warm and lovely. But I couldn't believe, it was like staring at the sun. I was like, you're talking to me? You want to go research our characters together? And I was really so nervous. She picked me up in a car service on like a Saturday morning, rolled down the window, and it's Judith Light, and we're just going through Brooklyn and going to Long Island where our characters were from, and like, you know, eating and chatting, and it was... It's so exciting when one of your heroes like takes an interest. I just think it was so special, and she's still in my life, and we talk and email, and it's just so like that's who you want to be when you are at that level. I mean, that's who I want to be, somebody who is generous and supportive. I think actors sometimes get a bad rap of being, you know, quite self-involved and, you know, really self-centered. But the really great ones I've found are so generous and are rooting for everyone. And one thing that Judith says a lot is just like when she walks into a room when she has an encounter with a person, she thinks, like, how can I lift this situation? How can I lift this person up? And I think if we all kind of... This is going to get real.
No,
okay.
Do it.
But
do
if
it.
We all kind of rooted for each other more, I think so much more cool stuff would get made. And I really took that to heart. And so I think it's nice to share your experience with people who are coming up.
No, because I feel like in this day, especially with the internet, it is much easier to just be, especially the anonymity that comes in there, to just be snarky and tear down other things. So you can have that approach where it's like, no, why don't we just treat it the other way and just be supportive and lift up people?
Right.
So much
right.
more. That could be a much more fun way.
Absolutely. And I think you feel it. You're a better person when you feel that somebody's rooting for you than when they're like, all right, what's going to come out of his mouth?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Well, I'm saying it's like with improv, where it's like the biggest tenet was like, yes, and. So let's all work together and build something better rather than be like the person that says, but I've got a problem, or no, I don't agree with this. And then why be that person that's kind of stopping great stuff from happening?
Right. It's building something that's better, like better and bigger than any one person. And that... is kind of like why I got into it with the storytelling and why I couldn't just make the one space alone. It's just to do it with people and make it with people is kind of what makes acting and theater and television really, really exciting because they're so collaborative.
So with Judith Light and you're traveling all around, where's the moment for you where you're just like, that you were able to set aside like, oh my gosh, I'm just hanging out with Judith Light, to be like, all right, she's just a person and we can just, I can just hang out and have a conversation with her.
She made that really easy because she just was like, all right, tell me about your family. Tell me, like, let's get into it. And are you dating anyone? What's going on? Like, just really lovely and protective in many ways. So I would say by the time we went on the LIRR to Long Island, after we had kind of cruised around Bed-Stuy in her rental car, by the time we were eating granola bars on the train, I felt really comfortable. And since, if I come across anything in my career that I don't really know how to handle, I will, you know, email her or Jessica Hecht, who is also, like, so spectacular and in that play. I was really lucky that I got to, my first big thing was with just not only incredible actors, but quality humans.
What is something, when you have that experience with Judith and you spend the day together just doing research, getting to know each other, mm-hmm. how does that impact when you're actually doing the show?
That's such a great question, because sometimes you can do all of that work and have great chemistry, and for whatever reason, on stage, it's you can't tell. But in this case, I played her kind of slightly slow daughter, and we had a lot of friction, and it was really helpful to feel that her love throughout going through some of the nastier scenes and interactions. It just felt safe. I felt safe to go places because I knew, oh, Judith actually likes me. We're playing characters. Yeah. And that's also true in that kind of fraught mother-daughter relationship where there is such love there. So getting to know someone in that way is really helpful.
So now, just the experience of being in a Broadway show in New York, while you're living in New York, what is that like to be able to just get up in the morning like, you know what, I'm going down to Broadway and I'm going to be in a show. That's going to be great.
It was such a dream. It was like, it was everything I wanted. I mean, I had a Broadway-themed bat mitzvah. I was like about this life. So it was very, so thrilling. And it was a crazy process, though, to go from kind of the safety of the rehearsal room to getting on that stage. And we were at a beautiful theater, but it's not big by Broadway standards. And to me, it was shockingly huge. And it was just so, so exciting and terrifying to think about all the people there. And I remember there was, there's like a lot of superstitions, and people say, oh, you have a bad dress rehearsal, you have a great opening, or you have a great first preview. And I had the worst dress rehearsal before our first preview. I just was really nervous and kept like looking at all the empty seats. I was really in my head, and got like a note the next day that I just got so nervous about, like, you know, I went into my whole, I'll never act. How did I get here? I'm a fraud. And I ended up going to a cafe in between shows, like having a real existential crisis. And an incredible, like, actor just happened to be sitting at the next table who was at an early reading of the play, Richard Mazur. And he's tremendous. And he just, without me saying anything, just said, you do that part that's in your heart and you don't think about doing it for anyone else. You just let it out. And don't think about those notes. Like, it was like my guardian angel in the form of this, like, Richard Mazur. It was crazy. But another, like, generous lesson from, and I find that in the Broadway community, there does seem to be a generosity, especially from more senior actors to people starting out. And that was a game changer to be like, yeah, no, it doesn't have to be exactly like anyone else imagined. This is my part. And kind of taking ownership of it was kind of a huge turning point.
And so for you, as you're doing the run of the show, doing it, you know, several nights in a row, were there times like, you know, I want to try to focus on this evening. I want to try maybe doing this line a little differently this evening and see what that does.
Yeah. It was a really interesting process because I didn't have that many scenes. And they were funny, but it's also heartbreaking because you want the audience to... my character needed to be in control a little bit of the laughter in the audience because you didn't want anyone to laugh at her. So it was a really interesting process to find the balance when the audience felt safe to laugh because they weren't going to hurt the character's feelings. So we really did try things a lot of different ways, and ultimately, as is true, I think, with most things, it's just the most honest way tends to work. You're like,
Oh, yeah,
the way I would normally say it? Okay.
Well, it's like that authenticity.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise, if it feels like it's like just something that's put on, then you're like, all right, I don't know if I believe this.
Yeah, or if it's someone else's great idea, but it's not coming from you, I think you can see it.
So while you're doing theater, when is the opportunity to start doing television? When does that start coming to you?
There is a lot of television that shoots in New York now, and I would audition for really small parts on shows. I think there was one medical show where I auditioned, and he had two lines, and it was like, breathe in, breathe out, and I just forgot the breathe out part, and the reader was like... so it definitely took a moment to kind of understand the way this new medium works. But yeah, I started auditioning for little things and would get little parts, and it was really exciting. And like at this time, television is also like becoming so exciting. It's like such a golden age, and I got really excited about the idea of being a part of a show that could reach more people, and because theater tickets are really expensive. And it just seemed like a more fair way to tell a story. I say that loving theater and also really appreciating the work that the Broadway community puts into making it accessible. It was just a matter of figuring out which stories are best told on stage and which are best told in other forms.
Is there a big difference between a theater audition and a television audition?
I think movement wise, I soon learned I'm kind of lanky and I can flail my arms, or, you know, I can get into it, and that can work in a really physical theater audition, but, specificity of your movement and more control, I think, is quite helpful. Also because the camera is so close. It's terrifying how close it is. I really love the distance of, like, the people in the mezzanine. But to be able to communicate more efficiently and not... that's something that I'm still learning how to do.
I guess that was, I say, like, tell more, say more with less?
Yes. I think that's, like, such a great thing for life. Yeah.
So you also came out here because earlier this year there was Doubt that aired on CBS with Katherine Heigl, Dulé Hill.
Oh, my goodness.
I cannot get enough of Dulé Hill.
Have you interviewed him?
I've never had the opportunity, but I've always loved him on West Wing, Psych. Loved him on Psych.
He's the best. Yeah, you guys would love each other.
Oh, my goodness.
Ed Laverne Cox was on it, Dreama Walker. Elliot Gould, another.
Yes.
Come on.
Like, what the opportunity to just, listen and chat and talk and pick the brain of Elliot Gould.
He was so kind and so generous. And I had never worked it on that scale before. Being on the CBS lot, they had two sound stages. The crew was incredible and enormous. And all I would think was just, Lauren, do not mess up your one simple line. And he just gave me great confidence because he also, no one laughs on, you know,
you're, that's true, you don't have that reaction.
Yeah. And so he was helpful for my ego sometimes because he was very kind and complimentary and encouraging, and we shouldn't need to rely on that, but sometimes in those really intimidating moments it can be so helpful when someone like Elliot Gould was like, that was funny.
So now, when the opportunity to, we've got a Nightcap, mm-hmm. Ellie Wentworth's show.
Yes.
So when does that come into your life? It's like, oh yeah, this is a project you may be interested in getting involved with.
Yeah, I think it was close to 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, and it was just an audition that came through my agents, like all other auditions, except they were like, there's kind of a script, but not really. Here's a little blurb about what you might want to improvise about in the room. And I was like, oh my God, this is very different, because usually you get the full script and you get the sides and you work on, you know, all of that. And this was just like, how would you respond if your character was asked to be a surrogate for Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos? And
easy.
Yeah.
Who doesn't get that all the time?
Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I got it. but yeah, so it was a really, it was an audition process that was very athletic to me. Like, it was very, I built some improv endurance, because Allie is like a force of nature. She's so funny and so quick, and the other cast members are so, I mean, some of them are just the most seasoned, incredible improvisers at UCB. They teach it. And here, like, I'm like a theater girl. I love comedy. I do love improv, but I don't have that extensive training that they have. So it was quite a room to walk into. And I had three callbacks for it. Each time they would throw something else at me, Allie would be there. She'd be like, okay, you want to just do that part? And I just, it was yes and. And to prepare for that, I found that instead of beating myself up, I'm like, why didn't I just get through all the courses at UCB? Like, that could have been a real negative route to go down. I was like, well, what do I know how to do? I know how to build a character. And so what I did for that was just really figure, get so specific about who Penny is. And then I felt like I could be honest when these crazy things were thrown in my face, because I know that Penny is a terrible hypochondriac and she's so eager to please. So then these crazy scenarios would be filtered through that lens, and it felt much more manageable.
So you did do some classes at you over at UCB.
I did, and yeah, they were great. I just, for whatever reason, got busy doing other things.
Sure.
Jeff Hiller, who plays the security guard,
yes,
he's so funny.
And he's like, well, Baby Wants Candy.
Oh my God, yes.
So great.
Wonderful. And Don Finelli, who plays like Jimmy's best friend on the show, Todd, he's another like great UCB performer and also teacher. So it was, and early on when we started shooting, it was kind of pitched as highly unscripted, or mostly unscripted. Eventually, we got great writers, including Allie, and to actually write it out, because they realized, how are we going to edit this crazy
yes
thing? That, but some of those early conference room scenes were really intimidating because of the just quickness of everyone else, the sharpness of the other like improvisers in the room. And I quickly learned that like I wasn't gonna really add to anything if I kept trying to get in with like one of the zingers.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like music and understanding like what your part of the music is. And sometimes it's not the punchline, and sometimes it is. But the level of listening on that show, it's like, was so important. And so I learned that right away, that if I came in with like my notebook of like, these are my really funny things that I will improvise, it didn't work. But if it came out of what was happening because I was actually listening to it,
mm-hmm,
and it worked.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there's a great, what's always great about that genre of show, where mm-hmm it's like Larry Sanders.
Oh,
or
my God, Nightcap, yes.
Where you're getting to see these celebrities who want to come in to kind of just poke fun at themselves and just play against expectations and just
yes
kind of do all these weird, ridiculous things. So the opportunity to work with all these other talented actors that are just coming in for one episode, it's got to be a lot of fun.
It's so fun, and it's so refreshing and amazing to see these huge, huge stars. Like Gwyneth Paltrow, just that example, she came on and we all like associate her with Goop and this like healthy lifestyle and her beauty. And she came on and in her episode, she's stealing things from the dressing room. She's like turning down vegetables and demanding carbs and fried chicken. And I think that there's something, especially like in our society where we just put fame and celebrities on such a pedestal, that it's brave and important for people to have a sense of humor about their celebrity and their brand. I think it just humanizes them. And so everyone was really game, and that was really fun. And then also they're just so like, I was just so starstruck for most of the time.
Well, when you get a new scene, and which I thought was delightful, but that with Kelly Ripa, Mark Consuelos, just wanted them to be a surrogate with you. The opportunity to do those sort of scenes, how much of it is scripted, and how much are you like, all right, we've done what's on the script, now we're just going to do a scene, we'll do a take where you guys can just do whatever you want.
Yeah, we had a lot of freedom, and especially the celebrities in particular have a lot of freedom because they can do what they want. So often they come like just completely memorized and such pros, but sometimes they have better ideas. They change it. Sometimes they just didn't look at it. And so, it's just having the flexibility of like reading your scene partner. But yeah, we had in that particular scene, we actually shot Kelly and Mark out. They of course are, you know, have very busy, wonderful lives. So they only had 3 hours for all of their material. So we got all of their coverage early in the morning. And then we didn't turn the camera back around until about 11 o'clock that night. And I was doing it to an X on the wall for Kelly. And so you just kind of have to remember what they were giving you. And it's challenging, but it's also, in some ways, the pressure is not as high because you're like, I'm not just trying to, often when I'm working with these celebrities, I'm just like, I just want to make you look as great as humanly possible. And not that you need help, but like for you. And so in some ways it's nice when that pressure is gone and now you can like figure out your own contribution to the scene. But they definitely let Mark Consuelos in particular was like so funny and such a great improviser. And they had ideas and then they would riff. And sometimes it would be like just so funny. We all would laugh.
So there's also the other bit where Whoopi Goldberg and you come in with dreads.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much so.
How long did that take to kind of get your hair like that?
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, maybe this is a look I'd like to continue to wear even after this episode airs.
Well, oh God, I should show you the after picture because taking them out was like the prom of like my dream hair. It's really, really intense. It's such a funny episode because the premise is that there's a lice infestation in the office and Whoopi Goldberg happens to be on and we don't know whether it's worse to have lice or be racist. Yeah. So we don't know which one to fess up to. So that was really fun. The dreads are the cornrows. It took a really long time, and I learned that I'm very tender-headed. I got better at it, but it's like really intense, like physical work that the hairstylists were doing, and we shot. It was just one episode, but because of celebrity schedules, we were in those dreads for days.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but it's cool because the show is very accommodating to the celebrities, and we feel lucky and excited to have them on. So if it means, like, a week of dreads, no big deal.
Yeah, it gives you a chance to explore what life would be like to have dreads on a regular basis.
Yeah, there you go. A lot of respect. They look so cool. Allie looked so interesting with her like blonde hair, and I looked crazy, but some people like really looked great.
So I one other thing that I noticed too about you is that you are a fan of making your own greeting cards.
Yes, you've dug
yes.
deep.
So what goes into the art of making your own greeting card?
Well, I like images. Like, I like old magazine images. Anytime I see, like, an old Life magazine from the 50s, I get it. I just really love mail, like old-fashioned mail. And so I have a New Year's tradition of making these insane New Year's cards for all of my friends and family, and sometimes like people that I just met, but I was like, oh, they should have a card. So, I mean, sometimes it's like a real lesson in OCD. It's like so detail-oriented. So it involves collaging and using sometimes yarn. I mean, and sometimes, to be fair, it looks like a kindergartner made it. Like, my aesthetic is not pristine. Like, it is homemade.
So is it on, do you use like a certain kind of cardstock?
Oh, well, it depends. I've done these books, these matchbook New Year's cards, where I did like a New York City skyline using the matches inside.
Oh, cool.
It was really cool and also crazy, like a crazy thing to decide to do, like in the height of the holidays. Like,
when I don't have anything else going on.
Yeah, I'm
sure.
Just going to do this. But so sometimes there are like physical objects that you can use, and then often I will make these really intricate collages and then color copy them and then turn them into some sort of booklet. Like this here, I had a pocket guide to 2017 that fit in your pocket. I mean, my friends are so sweet to indulge. I mean, they probably just have drawers of these crazy little cards that I make, but I really enjoy making them.
So what is, I would just like the print run for this. Like, do you do like 10, 15, 20, 50?
Up.
100? 150?
125.
Wow.
I know.
All individual. I mean, because it's a little bit
individual. I write individual things sometimes. It's so weird. I don't know. It gives me such pleasure, though. But I also joke, like, I could, if I, you know, took a step outside and was hovering above my crafting table, I'd be like, this is an insane person. This is a problem.
When do you, because I imagine you have to get back time from the holidays, so you start thinking about what you're going to be doing now?
And
no,
I should. It's always like I'm always freaking out. It's always, they're always after New Year's. They never make it before New Year's. So it's like, January 7th.
But that's great, because it's after, you know, everybody's getting gifts for the holidays, so it's nice to get a little something afterwards,
too. Yeah, this year I'll send you guys one, and you'll be this is crazy.
Yeah, that's this is our manifesto? What's going on with this?
I don't know.
And also one thing I want to ask you, too, is that you're a fan of quality fruit.
Yes.
What is your definition of quality fruit?
Oh, my goodness. What research? I just love fruit. I think being a California girl, such a strange conversation.
Yes.
But I really just love fruit so much. I went berry picking 2 weeks ago, and I've never been happier. I like, that was the happiest I've ever been. I think it's seasonal. Surely it's seasonal.
Yes.
I was also such a strange kid that, like, for my birthday 1 year, I told my parents all I wanted was to be a member of the Harry and David Fruit of the Month Club. And that's how much I love fruit.
Oh, all right, so power rank, give me your top five fruits.
Okay, currently, yes. I think we're having it's a great time for nectarines now.
All right.
Excellent time for nectarines. I love cherries, the really fancy, like, Rainier cherries, the yellow ones.
Oh, all right.
They're really expensive. It's a real indulgence. I love that. I love watermelon. I have to be really honest with you.
Okay.
I do not like pears.
I co-sign that. That pears are not.
Right.
There's something about the texture.
Exactly.
I can't get into them.
And I gotta say, for a lot of these fruit basket companies, they are heavy on the pears.
Yes, way too heavy.
Right.
Yeah, please, no more pears.
No
guys.
More pears.
Yes.
Let's go. I mean, there are so many other great ones.
It would be just great that you could do like a pear-less option. Like, I would love that you're company, just give me without the pears. Everything else.
Hold the pears.
Please.
We're done.
Where does cantaloupe fall on your scale?
Okay. I think that cantaloupe and honeydew, though delicious, often in the context of a fruit salad, are fillers.
All right.
Do we disagree?
We're going to have to disagree. Honeydew, I agree with you on that. I can't get into the cantaloupe. I can't get enough of cantaloupe.
You can't get enough of cantaloupe.
Yeah, I cannot get enough of it. I love it too much. Hot fruit talk.
Hello.
Lauren Blumenfeld. That's going to be our new podcast. Can we do a podcast?
Yeah, I love that it started with Kendrick Lamar, and now we're talking about fruit.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest has been Lauren Blumenfeld. Her show is Nightcap. It airs Wednesday nights on Pop. It started June 7th, so the second episode will be airing tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Look at that. So it's going to be fantastic. Actually, they doubled up. It's actually see episode 3 tomorrow night. They did a double showcase. I see episode 1 and 2 last Wednesday.
Exactly. And now it's on Hulu, so you can watch season 1.
So you can catch up on what you've missed. It's a very fun show. A lot of great celebrities and a lot of great fun stuff with Lauren Blumenfeld.
Oh,
so
thanks.
Please check it out. Now, if they want to follow up everything that you're doing in the world, whether it's going to be acting, greeting cards,
oh,
the
yes.
fruit that you're eating.
Yeah.
Where can they find you?
The Real Lauren B. So R-E-A-L Lauren B. And that's pretty much Instagram, Twitter, which we talked about. I need to get stronger at using
oh, yes.
the process. And Lauren Blumenfeld on Facebook. But yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
How fun.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I've been your host, Frank Moran, and you can find me at Happy Go Jackie. Or not, you know, a lot of food pictures. You know, that's what
I'm about to.
Oh, hot dog. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you back here with another episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight on. Right here on AfterBuzz TV. Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.